take it. Oh, holy my cow. Goodness! That's holy illegal! God. Where did he jump from? We gotta check those sneakers.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum, Sportsnet's NBA editor. If you found us, you already know how, but go out and tell your friends that they can catch Free Association every Tuesday on sportsnet.ca or on iTunes at any time. And while you're on iTunes, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Leave some reviews. We like that. How do you listen to the show? We want to know. Are you listening to it in your car? Are you listening to it in the browser? You download it on iTunes? Drop us a line. You can hit me up on Twitter at Dave Zarum, Z-A-R-U-M, or just use the hashtag Free Association. Toss me an email, dave.zarum@sportsnetmagazine.com. I know, how long is that email address? But we always want to hear from you. Feedback is always a good thing, and we cherish it. J.D. Bunkus is away this week, so I'm flying solo. To celebrate, I think I'll be counting down the top 250 guitar solos of all time. All right, here we go. At number 250. Okay, never mind. We'll talk basketball. I get it. That's cool. There's a lot going on in the basketball world to talk about. For example, the FIBA Olympic qualifying tournament that kicks off today. A big week of basketball ahead for Canada. I can't remember the last time that Canada has entered a tournament like this as one of the favorites. But here we are, and you know, after their performance at the Tuto Marchand Cup last week, in which they captured gold, or they captured the cup, however you say it, they certainly are the favorites. And this is the truth that we live in right now when it comes to basketball in this country. We'll hear from Robert Sacre in a bit. He's a backup center for Team Canada, also on the Los Angeles Lakers. And he's a certified class clown on that team, and you're going to hear why pretty shortly. We put Sacre through the FAQ, the Free Association questionnaire. We did the same with the women's star, Kia Nurse, and she'll be on the show later, so don't miss out on that. You know, it's been pretty quiet on the Raptors front in terms of moves and whatnot. Masai Ujiri just got back from working with his incredibly successful Giants of Africa program. We will be talking to Masai about that in an upcoming episode. And make sure you check out Sportsnet Magazine, a really cool story profiling Masai and his work there, reported in Africa with Masai by Evan Rosser. That's coming out soon. Later on in the show today, however, we will talk Raptors with former Raptor Tracy Murray. We're going to look at the offseason a little bit. I mean, Tracy's got some cool perspective on this team, specifically rookie Norman Powell. Tracy called his games in UCLA for, I believe, the last four seasons, so his whole UCLA career. So we'll hear from Tracy on that. He's also out in Vegas where, you know, he's had a firsthand view of the Canadian pipeline that's going down there. You know, a lot of Canadians having success at places like Findlay Prep, Corey Joseph, Tristan Thompson come to mind. And also this season, guys like Jalen Poser is at UNLV. There's other Canadians there as well. Anthony Bennett, obviously a proud alum of that program. So Tracy's got some cool perspective on that. So we'll talk to him about that. You know, I was also watching some old Raptors games. You know, they show them on NBA TV. And there's a game where Tracy was just in the zone, you know. And I want to ask him about what it's like to be a shooter in that zone. I mean, it's got to be a special feeling. I wish I could relate to it, but I just can't. So I want to ask him about that. He's actually calling in right now. So let's get right to it. You're listening to Free Association.
Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, voice of the Chicago Bulls. You're listening to Free Association. Onions, baby onions!
All right, this is Free Association. Thrilled to have back. I guess we can officially call you a regular of the show, Tracy Murray, long-range bomber, longtime Toronto Raptor fan favorite. How you doing, Tracy?
I'm doing good, thanks. Thanks for having me on again.
Anytime. We love it when you're on. You know, it's been a while. I'm trying to think. When we had you on before, it was during the NBA playoffs. I think just before the finals. So it really has been a while. I mean, it almost feels like the landscape of the whole league has shifted a bit. So I want to ask you about that. I want to get into the NBA offseason, what we saw, what you see coming up. But first, you know, here in Canada, we're all pretty thrilled because today is the start of the FIBA Americas Tournament, the Olympic qualifying.
Obviously, the states are in already, but for Canada, you know, this is the first time that we've really been able to enter a tournament like this with any real shot of winning it, at least for a long time. Just from your perspective, I'm down there in the States. I know you got all these connections with Canada, but still, just being down there, I mean, is there any sense about that, any talk about that at all?
Well, I mean, when it comes to international play, all they talk about is USA basketball here because of so many stars that are on the team.
That's right.
But I personally always keep an eye on what's going on up in Canada. I tell you, Canada is the new hotbed for basketball players. You see tons of Canadians getting college scholarships. You see tons of them getting jobs in the NBA now. And tons of jobs overseas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of talent in Canada, especially up in that Toronto area.
And you're down in Vegas, right? And I mean, I know Finley Prep down there, UNLV. There's a lot of in your direct area. There's a lot of Canadians.
Yes, yes. There's been a pipeline from Toronto to Finley Prep for a while now. And then it just seems like everybody went from Finley Prep to Texas for a second,
mm-hmm.
University of Texas. So, I mean, but they're bouncing all over the place. There's a few up in Oregon. There's a few in Kentucky. There's a few in Gonzaga. They're all over the place. Canadian basketball players are all over the place. And there were a couple of teams that went down to play in the Fab 48 down in Las Vegas, a couple of high school teams. And I poked my head into the gym to watch them and see how they play and then watch the talent level. And we personally had a game against Don Maker's team. He didn't play that night.
Okay.
You know, he sat out because they had an 8 o'clock game the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of talent on that team, and I'm just so proud to see where to see what Canadian basketball is, especially in that Toronto area, because I feel like I call them Raptor baby.
Totally.
Because
yeah.
They grew up on Raptor basketball. It actually gave them a shot and a dream that they can make it into the NBA because they have the team right there in
mm-hmm.
their city.
Exactly. I mean, we talk about it all the time. You know, there's obviously this rise in basketball talent, not only in the quality of talent, but also in the numbers. And we're always talking about, you know, why or how did this happen? And it's like you said, Raptor baby is a great term for it, because I do think, you know, your Raptor teams brought it into the forefront, showed you something like, hey, here's the destination. It's right here in front of you. Also, you factor in, like, I think Steve Nash, you can't overlook that. Having, you know, one of your own winning MVPs is hard to ignore. You know, the Vince Carter effect, just that kind of like pop culture element to it. I think also the coaching has gotten a lot better over the years.
I think it was a little bit of everything, because you got to look at a situation to where, you look at, let's use Africa for an example.
Great.
If it wasn't for the Manute Bowles, if it wasn't for the Akeem Olajuwons, if it wasn't for a few of those guys coming over here and really making an impact, and if it wasn't for the NBA going over to Africa every year and having a Basketball Without Borders program
mm-hmm.
over there, there wouldn't have been a streamline of African players coming over here. Same thing with Toronto, with having the Raptors there and the Raptor Foundation and the camps that they've had it all year. You know, you're developing your talent. And that's why you're seeing a big invasion of Canadian players in the NBA, African players in the NBA, even South American players.
Yeah, no question. I'm really glad you brought up the kind of changing landscape in Africa and the new pipeline there as well, because this is a shameless plug with Sportsnet magazine. We went down, Evan Rosser, one of our editors, went down with Masai Ujiri and his Giants of Africa program. They just got back last week. And so in our next issue, we have a whole 10-page spread on what Masai and what that group is doing down there. And from talking to Evan, the writer, just the amount of talent there is just unbelievable. And yeah, like you're saying, it's all these factors going into it that makes it really kind of a new global landscape for basketball. And it's cool to see it happening over there. It's cool to see it happening over here. And it's got to be good for the game, right? I think it makes Americans have to be better as well, right?
It does, because for so long, the Americans dominated the sport, and I think that we've sort of taken it for granted.
Yeah, comfortable.
That it's our sport, and we can just show up and play any old way, and we're going to dominate. And that's not the case. You got people overseas developing their talents.
Mm-hmm.
The old fundamentals that we grew up on that young players don't work on nowadays in the States. They work on it in Canada. They work on it in Africa. They work on it in Europe. They work on it in South America. So you're wondering why these kids are coming into college and into pros ahead of American players. Why? Because they work on, they have a foundation, which is called the fundamentals of the game that they have. And then you add their athleticism and their hard work and their determination and their hunger to it. Now they're snatching jobs. Now they're snatching scholarships.
Yeah, listen.
I went over overseas with Masai a few years ago to the Basketball Without Borders program over there. That's where I first met Masai, and it's an excellent program.
He's an interesting character, isn't he? He's a pretty fascinating guy.
He is, and he's doing an excellent job of what he's doing up there. He's motivating the fans in the community, and he's doing an excellent job with the Raptors.
So that's a great transition. Let's shift over to, I guess let's talk about Raptors real quickly. I mean, when you look at their offseason, the way they flamed out against the Wizards in the playoffs was disheartening, I think is the best word. It really was painful to watch the way they performed against Washington. So then you look at their offseason, Masai goes out, he gets Damari Carroll, Corey Joseph, these guys from winning programs, put an emphasis on defense. Bismack Biyombo, another defensive kind of guy, although I don't know how much we're going to see from him. But just your general take on kind of the transformation that Masai is trying to help take place with the Raptors.
Well, it was kind of painful to watch the ending of that after such a great year.
Yeah.
To see the Raptors sort of run out of gas, so to speak. But he addressed some issues, which was defense from the guard standpoint. You got Norman Powell up there now who can defend the one and the two positions.
He looked great in Vegas, huh?
Yeah, but I've been watching him for the last 4 years. I've been broadcasting this game to UCLA.
Oh, that's right.
I saw the progress over the years, and he really took a major jump this year, not only in his game, but in his confidence. He actually believed that he can do it. And that's the difference of two coaches that he had, you know. Under Ben Howland, he didn't have the same mindset, you know. But under Coach Alford, he blossomed. And he had the confidence to become the player that he did. And DeLon Wright, he's a good defender, too. He's long. He's rangy. He can defend shots. He knows how to get around picks. He can guard the ball on the ball pretty well. I mean, he's a very good player. So the things that they've done, Damari Carroll, you know what he did in Atlanta all year. You know, you added a veteran to the team who's still hungry, who wants to win. So there are some pieces, good pieces to the puzzle added, and there's a few more pieces that need to be added, probably with the big guys, and then go from there. You know, roll the dice and see where it goes.
You know, being a guy who followed Powell over the last few years, I mean, there's some talk about him having a real opportunity to take some minutes away from some veteran guys this season, like in his rookie year, which I don't think people expected on draft day. But just from watching, I mean, do you think he's, because we saw it in the summer league, but it's, you know, the summer league, it's hard to really evaluate how that's going to translate to the NBA.
I think that he will be a good rotation guy.
Okay.
You know, because you got to look at what people do in the summer league. Like say he averaged 18 points. Yeah. You got to look at that's going to be about 8 or 9 points in the league, because you got to look at people that know how to play, people that know plays, they know how to defend certain situations. So you got to cut that off a little bit. The people that are in the summer league, they might have individual agendas because they're trying to make teams.
Yeah.
So it's not the team that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of cut the performance a little bit in half, so to speak, and say, okay, this is what he's going to bring to the table. But one thing consistently he's going to bring to the table night in, night out, and that's defense. And that's what the Raptors need. So he's going to break into the rotation just by his defense alone. What he can bring offensively is just going to be a plus.
And you know that Dwayne Casey's a coach that is going to be rewarding defense and looking for guys to do that. So that's going to keep him on the floor for sure. You know, one thing that I, when you look at the roster, I think they certainly lost some kind of offensive punch when you lose a guy like Lou Williams. But one guy I don't really see is that guy, the streaky shooter who can get hot from deep. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's, right. I think, it will hurt them for some games, probably.
Well, I mean, shooting is a problem all across the league, with the exception of Golden State,
yeah.
You know, who's really shooting it like that? Not too many teams are really shooting like that. And you have, you know, shooters sprinkled all over the league. You have your you have Kyle Korver down in Atlanta. You have, you know, McDermott up in Chicago. You have a couple people sprinkled all over, you know, but not on one team like you see with Golden State. So you have to stay honest with them all the time. That's why they're able to penetrate from a guard point of view or have a post-up with no double teams, because you got somebody that's going to kill you on the perimeter. I think shooting is a major problem. There's no one that's taking advantage of the mid-range shots anymore. They either cast a three or they're driving all the way to the bucket using their athleticism trying to finish over big people. And it's like the one-bounce dribble pull-ups, the one-bounce dribble step-back, they're all wide open. Mm-hmm. And I think people need to take advantage of that mid-range a little bit more. Then you can see the scoring go up. Then you can see the driving lanes open up even that much more. You can see the whole production of the whole offense get better.
And that really used to be the kind of like the bread and butter of basketball. I mean, at some point, I mean, I think of a guy like Bernard King or something, where these guys were just killing people in that mid-range, and that's where they would live, and obviously were really effective with it.
Well, come on, Reggie Miller and myself, we're known for Dale Curry as well.
Yeah.
We're all known for we're the long-range bombers. We're bombing from three. Yeah, that's what we're known for. But we made a living in the mid-range area. If anybody remembers, we were curling off of picks, dropping 18 to 20-footers all the time. That was most of our points. Huh. The three-pointers, we weren't casting a bunch of three-point shots like they do nowadays. I can't remember too many times where I've gotten 10, 11, 12 three-point shots up. Normally we're getting maybe 5 to 6 up.
Yeah.
You know, and I was making a good percentage of that, maybe 3 of 6 or 4 of 6 or 2 of 6. But, I mean, it wasn't, you know, just come and just cast a bunch of three-point shots like they're doing nowadays. It was mostly we scored mostly in the mid range.
You know, I got to ask you. They were showing, you know, up here on NBA TV in Canada, they always show the old Raptors games during the summer, and they had a game on. I forget what game it is, but you were having one of your shooting nights, and you were clearly kind of in the zone. And I was just thinking, I mean, I don't know what that feels like. You know, I don't think most people don't know really what that's like. I mean, what's happening with you? I mean, is it a mostly mental thing, or is it a like, what's going on when you're in that zone, when everything you're shooting is going in, regardless of what the guy in front of you is doing defensively? I mean, can you just describe kind of being in that moment?
Well, it's just a different bounce to your step. It's confidence.
Okay.
And it happens, you know, this is what defenders, most great defenders realize this, but most average to poor defenders don't realize this. If you defend somebody on their first couple of shots, you can dictate how they're going to shoot or play. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, it's a rare situation, like say a Michael Jordan or somebody that's going to get, you know, 25 to 30 shots, which is rare in the NBA. Only your stars with a Michael Jordan or a Kobe Bryant that have the ultra green light that can get, you know, 30 shots a game, they can come out of a slow start or a bad shooting first quarter or something like that. Everybody else, they don't have the freedom to do that. So if you can defend the first couple of shots, then you've done your job, because mentality-wise, they're not feeling free. They're not feeling confident. The first couple of shots are so important. Huh. So when I come off the bench, if you know, I always had a rule on me. It just seems like every coach put this rule on me. If I miss two shots, I'm coming out the game. So that's extra pressure. You know what I mean? So you got to come out there, you got to feel free, and you got to knock down your first couple of shots. If you knock down your first couple of shots, that's more minutes. If you don't knock down the first couple of shots, then just start heading to the bench. That was my rule for some reason. But when I was a starter in Toronto, I didn't have that rule. So now you see some of the 30-point games, the 25-point games, that 140-point game I had up there. It's easier because you don't play looking over your shoulder. You're feeling free. You're feeling confident. You're feeling you can take any shot you want and you can make it.
And that's bizarre. I mean, there's this weird, like, this looseness, you know, everything's, you're doing all the scouting, your coaches are preparing everything, but really you have to really kind of, like you're saying, be free. I mean, you have to kind of forget all that when you're on the court to an extent, don't you?
Right, but that's why the first, you know, the top two guys on every team are getting 20 to 25 points a game.
Yeah.
It's because they're feeling free. They're playing like they did in high school. They're playing like they do in pickup games.
Mm-hmm.
When you're allowed that type of freedom, that's how you're going to play. Everybody in the NBA can play. And if everybody in the NBA was given that type of freedom and that type of confidence to go out and perform like that, you would see more guys do that.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. You can't. There's not enough balls for everybody to do that. There's only one ball and five guys on the court at a time per team.
And
so
you
can't allow everybody to just come out and just free stroke shot.
And I think we talked about this last time around. But I mean, that's what makes or breaks a guy's career in a lot of ways, is being able to accept the fact that there's only one ball, and I might not be the guy shooting it 15 times tonight.
Especially if you are known as a scorer. Like in high school, I averaged 44 a game. I averaged 44 in high school. I averaged 18 points a game in 3 years with UCLA. My last 2 years, I was averaging 21. So when you're coming into the league, you're thinking your role is going to be, I'm going to be a scorer.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't my role. They wanted me for my shooting, not my scoring, which is totally different. Scoring, you can post up. You can mid-range. You can ISO. You can drive to the bucket and finish at the bucket. They wanted me to stand in corners and keep my man next to me,
So
everybody else can penetrate and drive and use their talent. So if that's what my role is on the team, or if that's what my role is for my 12 years that I played in the NBA, then that's what my role was. You know, now the half a year that I started with the Raptors, you saw my real game. The 50-point game you saw in Washington, you saw my real game. You saw what I really can do.
Huh.
But don't think for a moment that there are many other people in the league, past, present, or future, that can do the same thing.
I mean, is that frustrating for you, or are you just, you know, like you said, that kept you in the league for 12 years, was knowing your role. But is it frustrating knowing, hey, look, I know what I can do, and I'm not able to show it?
Very frustrating.
Okay.
It was probably the most frustrating thing, and that was the reason for the roller coaster ride, you know, for most people in the NBA. You know, it's a roller coaster for 90% of the players that come through the NBA. It's pretty much smooth sailing for maybe 1 or 2% of the players, because they're able to play their game, and everybody else have to sacrifice. And is it frustrating? Very frustrating, because I know my talent. They know their talent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But people who don't know you, like fans, you know, even some of the general managers, they really don't know what you bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
They just see, you know, bits and pieces of what you do. And then, you know, okay, you're a shooter, so you come over here and you stand in the corner. That's what the coaches would do, you know, unless you get a coach like Brendan Malone that came in the very first year with Isaiah Thomas. They're like, okay, you know, throw the ball up. Everybody establish their positions
clean
now.
Clean slate, yeah.
Whoever's the most aggressive, you know, hey, you guys are going to be the ones that's going to be the scorers. Damon was the star.
Yeah.
Damon was the most aggressive. He had the ball. He was the draft pick. Everybody knew, you know, that number one, first and foremost, that he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else was fighting for that number two spot.
Huh. I mean, that's just, it's wild to think about. And, you know, I bet you that translates to even outside of athletics, you know what I mean? Like, there's people everywhere frustrated. They're not able to show, you know, everything that they're able to do. They got to hold, to be able to exercise that kind of restraint, I think, takes a lot of, I don't know what the word is. It takes a lot to be able to hold back and know that you can do more.
Well, if you don't, you're going to be out of a job.
Exactly.
You got to find your way, and you got to figure out a niche. And the ultimate goal, anyways, is to make a career out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're going to constantly fight what they're telling you to do, then your career is going to be short.
Yeah.
You got to eventually figure it out. If they want me to stand in the corner and just be a shooter, then that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to try to do the best in my minutes at shooting a basketball.
Listen, I really appreciate you taking the time, Tracy. We'll have you on again closer to the season to talk actual kind of preview stuff. But this was interesting. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me on again.
No problem.
Hello, Toronto. I love everybody.
And tell people about your show.
I'm on Ballin' Live. We're on Sports Byline. I'm on with Van Coleman, who's the guru. He's scouted everybody over the last 35, 40 years of when they were in high school. He knows everything that's coming out of Toronto, everything that's coming out of the United States when it comes to talent. Brett Grant, who's one of our hosts as well, he's excellent, and he's very informative and great at what he does. And the three of us are on Ballin' Live on Sports Byline.
Thanks again, Tracy, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, take it easy.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Tracy Murray. Always like having him on. A bunch of interesting stuff he said there. I mean, first of all, I love the notion that Canadian players and you know, international players in general, but Canadian players are putting the American prospects on notice. You know, he talked about the fundamentals that Canadian guys are coming in. And, you know, I brought it up with him. I really do think a lot of that comes down to the progression of coaches in this country. There's been a huge movement to get better certification, you know, better educated. There's a lot more incentive for coaches to be developing players the right way. And you're seeing the results, and we're going to be seeing it, you know, at the FIBAs this weekend and through the NBA next season and beyond and in the college season. You know, he mentioned Oregon, guy like Dylan Brooks, who was in the Pan Am Games. I mean, these guys have serious game, and it's really cool to see them showing it. Also, you know, he talked about Powell. I'm with him in that, you know, maybe we'll see him as a rotation player, but it's hard to judge his potential just based on the summer league. So really, he's one of the more intriguing players on that Raptors roster this season. Defense will give him minutes, and he is a good defensive player, but, you know, he really struggled with his shot in college. And while it looked good in the summer league, it's still just the summer league. So a lot to look out for there. I'm pretty optimistic about him as a rookie. I mean, not rookie of the year or anything like that, but he's going to open some eyes. I think he's going to steal some minutes from potentially a guy like Terrence Ross. Who knows? They're going to need him defensively. That's for sure. You know, the other thing Tracy mentioned, and I couldn't be more with him on this, is when you look at the Raptors roster right now, I mean, it is, I suppose, for all intents and purposes, complete. This is the team we're going to see. But that front court, it's lacking something. It's lacking some oomph. And I don't know if you saw, I mean, on, what was it, Instagram? I don't know, on the internet, there was a picture on Monday of DeMar DeRozan working out with Chris Bosh. And you look at this picture they snapped of each other hanging out, and it's hard to not think of what could have been. You know, you look at what this roster needs right now, and it's a go-to guy down low. It's a Chris Bosh. Maybe Valanciunas can develop into that, but I don't know if it's going to happen this season. And, you know, Luis Scola is nice. We're going to see him playing with Argentina at the FIBAs. That's not the Luis Scola we're going to be seeing in the NBA. Also, Bismack Biyombo, you know, he's good, he's talented, but I don't know how much you can rely on him. So I think there are questions with that front court. We're probably going to see Carroll at the four a lot. But again, I mean, I'm just not sure about that. I think that's definitely the glaring area of need still on this team going forward. Speaking of going forward, talking FIBAs real quick, you know, JD and I talked about it last week. Canada's in a pretty good position here to make some noise, get into the Olympics. I mean, this is the time, the window's open. So now's the time to take advantage of this talented team. We're still missing some good players. I mean, Tristan Thompson's not on this team. This is a guy who can make or break a game here or there, and they're going to be missing him, but they're still going to be good. You know, every game they play, Andrew Wiggins will probably be the best player on the floor. So it's a really unique situation for Canada. Optimistic about their chances here, but it's going to be a lot tougher than that Tudor Marchand tournament. You know, you're going to see full strength from the teams. But, you know, the thing that sticks out to me, and I meant to ask Tracy about this, I just totally forgot, was the schedule. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the schedule for the FIBA Americas, but it's nuts. These guys play every day. I mean, they're playing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's no stop. I'd love to hear like the conversation between NBA teams and the players or their reps in terms of negotiating whether or not they'll play for their national team, because it's a grind. And you can imagine teams, NBA teams, being really hesitant to let their guys go into that situation where you're playing day after day after day. And it's not easy basketball. It's really physical, kind of grinded out ball. Really susceptible to injuries. So it's going to be tough for some of the guys. But, you know, I think having someone like Robert Sacre on the team might help keep guys loose, certainly behind the scenes. I mean, you talk to the players, he's the guy who they'll tell you is the class clown, so to speak. And, you know, I spoke to Sacker before the team went down to Puerto Rico for their initial tournament, which is obviously before they went down to Mexico for this tournament. And I asked him, you know, we do this thing called the Free Association Questionnaire, the FAQ. And they're kind of, you know, silly, this or that, rapid fire questions. And you know, if you've ever seen our Know Your Raptors videos that we've done the last couple of years on sportsnet.ca, then you know the drill. It's these hard hitting rapid fire questions that seem stupid, but it actually kind of reveals a lot about a guy's personality. And needless to say, Robert Sacra, he passed with flying colors.
Asking the tough questions the other shows are too scared to ask. It's Free Association Quiz with
Robert Sacra.
Start off simple. Favorite shoe?
Tai Chi's. N1 Tai Chi's.
All right. If you were a wrestler, what would your entrance music be?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, my goodness. I would do I Need a Hero, Pat Benatar.
That's a good one. What would your character be? Have you thought that far?
I would just be the villain.
Okay, with the Pat Benatar theme song. Sorry, makes sense. Okay, if you were on, you know, Shark Tank in the States, Dragon's Den up here, if you were on that show, what would your pitch be?
I'd be selling chickens out of my chicken coop.
Right, it's a $1 million one right there. If the team held a track and field event, what event would you hold down?
Shot put.
And who would be your biggest competition?
Boozer.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. If you were in a band, what instrument would you play?
Bass guitar.
Bass never gets enough respect. Integral part of the team.
Yeah, it's bass is everything. I'd be the bass guitarist.
BLT or club sandwich?
BLT.
Good answer.
All right, so there you hear Robert Sacra. I think you get a pretty clear picture of what that guy's about. I love the fact that he said, but he went with Pat Benatar for his wrestling entrance music. I mean, that's you got to respect that. I don't think a lot of NBA players are coming out with that. So big fan of Sacra. Thanks to him for doing that. And, you know, I did the same thing with Kia Nurse. If you've been on sportsnet.ca for the last week or so, we've been running a Kia Nurse Q&A that I did with her just after the women's team won gold at their FIBA Americas qualification in Edmonton a couple weeks back. And Kia is a real fascinating person. I mean, really interesting. For someone who's 19, she's really got it together. It's really promising future for her on and off the court. Check out that interview on sportsnet.ca if you haven't already. But something that didn't make it into that interview was Kia Nurse taking part in the FAQ, the Free Association Questionnaire. Same thing we did with Sacra. Now it's Kia Nurse's turn. Here we go.
Club sandwich or BLT?
Club sandwich.
Good answer. Your favorite sneaker, your favorite basketball shoe. I don't know if you're a shoe person, but...
Yeah, I'm into KDs right now, but I also like the Kobes, and I do like the LeBron, so you could pick any of those kind.
Okay. So very selective.
Yes.
What's the best or the funniest thing a fan has ever yelled at you?
The best was the sign that they made at the tournament the other day that said, Darnell who? That was amazing. That was amazing, and he was there for that one too. That was great.
Yeah, you got to see it. If your team, and this can be UConn or we can do both, let's do Canada.
Okay.
If your team competed in a track and field event, or competing in track and field, what event are you confident that you would take down?
Absolutely, 100 meter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm a sprinter.
And who would be your biggest competition?
Naira.
Really?
Yeah, she would. But yeah. It's okay, I got that one.
Okay, mm-hmm. Good. Glad to hear. Okay, this is my favorite one. If you were on Dragon's Den, what would your pitch be?
Something with making McDonald's McFlurries at home.
Oh, that's pretty
like
good.
On demand, yeah.
That's a great one, actually. That's the first like viable one I've ever heard. Patrick Patterson wanted to bring a portable case that you can pee in on the airplane, so you don't get off.
Oh god!
Like, so you can see what I'm doing most of the time. What's the last time you cried watching a movie?
John Q.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, with Denzel Washington.
Yeah, in the sun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a sad movie.
Good. All the NBA guys say Titanic every single one.
I've never seen that movie.
It's not like you wouldn't be crying at it, but John Q would be a good one. If you were in a band, what instrument would you play?
I'd be the singer, lead singer. Absolutely.
Perfect. Last one. If you were a wrestler, what would your entrance music be?
Beyonce, anything. Probably Flawless or Girls Around the World.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great answer.
All right, thanks to Kia Nurse for that. I mean, it's, like I said, they're pretty dumb questions, but you do get a sense of their personality. Even just that question, you know, what instrument would you play if you were in a band, or what position would you play if you were in a band? You know, Sakura, a backup center, a role player, someone who kind of embraces his job as a role player. Even when he was like at Gonzaga, when he was a starter and getting a bunch of minutes, he still kind of did the dirty work and was that kind of complimentary piece. He says he'd be a bass player. When you look at Kia Nurse, a star in the making, if she isn't one already, and who's starting to learn that she is a star on the rise, starting to become more self-aware of that, she doesn't hesitate to say she'd be a lead singer. So I think that's pretty interesting. Tells you a little bit about them there. Next week, we'll be back with J.D. Bunkus back in the fold. I want to let you know about a couple things happening on Sportsnet.ca. First of all, FIBA Americas. We got Michael Grange and Eric Smith down there in Mexico City. So they'll be filing, Grange will be filing after every game. You'll find a reaction column from him. Always good stuff. Plus, check out their hits on TV and videos on sportsnet.ca. All sorts of reaction from Mexico City. Plus, we'll be following it from here as well. We're in Toronto right now. Also, I mentioned it briefly with Murray. Sportsnet Magazine has this tremendous Masai Ujiri profile coming out by Evan Rosser, who was in Africa, in Ghana and Nigeria, I believe, just this past month with Ujiri during the Giants of Africa program at these camps that they hold for kids down there. And just some really fascinating stories coming out of that. I just saw some of the pictures in it, and they're really, really tremendous work all around there. So we'll talk to Evan about what it was like reporting that story, and we'll talk to Masai about the work he's doing down there in more detail. That issue with that story hits newsstands next week. So next week we'll dive into that story a little bit more. Listen, once again, you can find us on iTunes. Hit that subscribe button. Leave reviews. You can find us on sportsnet.ca every Tuesday. I'm at Dave Zarum, Z-A-R-U-M, on Twitter. Or you can just throw out that hashtag Free Association, and we'll find your questions, your comments, whatever else you got. This has been fun. You're listening to Free Association, and now you're not. Yeah. I used to wear Timbos in the backpack. It's K-Dash and you know I'm bringing rap back. I'm on your mind like a Scully or a snapback. And I'm eating MCs like a handful of Cracker Jacks. Yeah. K-Hep the fourth Fuji. I once had a fetish. Fetish for some booty. That girl from West Hollywood, she never used to do me. Polish my furniture as if she never knew me. Hootie hoo. Like Big Boy and Andre. I'm Jesus like Kanye. I'm Mount Vesuvius. Your rappers are Pompeii. Most deaf like Dante. My rhymes can't be repeated, so call my style Beyonce. You catch it? I'm wretched. MCs need to get to step it. Like Fatski, I'm here to teach rappers a lesson. Peace to brother question. Black thought is what I'm caught in, so I'm darker than the resin in your road split. In your ashtray, half A. My mother is Jack A, the ghetto classic. Peace to Ager, K Wonder, Essex. Might make your head flip like Lady Taser gymnastics. Took the war like Spider-Man. I'm lying.
This is about all of us. I love you people.